Coming up, a Sad Styles production.
Get into it!
What's going on, everybody? Welcome to episode 29 of the Good Buds Podcast, a show about the Toronto Maple Leafs. Not weed, but weed is tight. My name is Joey Belfiore, and I'm here with Andrew Bascom. Andrew, yes.
I'm so glad we recorded after game two, not game one. Yes, very good. Yeah. Oh, buddy.
Leafs tie the series, split the games in Boston, going back home. 1-1. Yep. A lot to take in from both nights. Let's just kind of talk about all of it.
Yeah.
First off, like, my goodness, Austin Matthews needed a game where he just kind of said, we're not losing this. I'm putting the team on my back. And
yeah,
he delivered. What a performance. 2 assists, one goal, hits everywhere, faceoffs went like crazy. Just like, my goodness.
it's one of those, like, Austin Matthews is a Toronto Maple Leaf moments where, you know, we had it all season with scoring 69 goals. Nice. And then you get these moments where he felt like he was on the ice every other shift. Like, it just felt like, which, by the way, unsurprisingly, he had the most minutes on the team, even more than Morgan Riley. So yeah, by a couple seconds, but over 23 minutes, that's a lot of time. And it felt like it, he was just influencing the game in all three factors. He was just unbelievable.
That goal, I mean, that pass from Domi, that looked like Peyton Manning dropping that diamond there. Beautiful play. Austin takes it. And then the head fake, just the head fake that gets Allmark to bite. And the moment he bites, Austin goes forehand. See you later. A goal with 7 minutes left in the third. Like, ugh. And you knew after that Boston was going to push. You knew it was going to be tough. We take a penalty. You know, that Boston power play is relentless. So you're just the entire time I was nervously drinking.
Oh yeah.
The entire time.
You and I were out together and that bill at the end reminded me of how much we drank because you're just nervous. You're just flying through anything in front of you. The power play looked, you know, their power play is incredible, but one of the biggest differences of game one to game two is the penalty kill. You know, the fact that we were able to kill at a higher rate than we were in game one, you know, went a long way, but because, you know, if we want to talk about it too, you know, McCabe takes a very stupid penalty. And, like, you know what? I'm all for the idea that, like, is that a penalty? Is it not? It's like, well, it doesn't really matter. It was so obvious and outside of the play that you're like, well, it's going to get called, even though I don't know if it should be or not. And then, of course, they make us pay almost immediately. But only to have Domi score 14 seconds later is just, like, a great bounce back, which is just a general theme of the game, game two.
Yeah, it was a big bounce back night for a lot of players. Mm-hmm. Including probably most notably Ilya Samsonov.
An
absolute gem from him last night. I think that, like,
huge.
There is no more conversation. We kind of talked about this going into the playoffs, saying, like, this is his net. There shouldn't be a debate. Like, obviously, he's going to get a bit of a longer leash than just one game. But naturally, what Leafs fans do is we lose 5-1 and everyone's calling for Joe Wall already. Like,
100%.
Like, they hadn't seen Joe Wall play not great since he's been healthy. Yeah. So a game like that ends any sort of conversation, I think, for the rest of the series. And you're just like, this is Sammy's net. Let's go.
I know. It's funny, though, because game one, you know, giving up 5 goals, not great. One of the things about that is it's not like Samsonov played terrible. He just didn't make huge saves. Mm-hmm. And in game two, he played to the same level, but those huge saves were there. He made some absolutely ridiculous huge saves. And that's the difference of, like, playoff goaltending, I think. It's just the difference of, like, making a really big save when you have to. You know, and that wasn't there in game one, and it very much was there in game two.
Yeah, that push off off the posts at the beginning of the third period to stop Brad Marchand, that pad save was unbelievable. Yeah. I shrieked like a little schoolboy. What a save. Just stuff like that where like you said, he's coming up with massive saves where, it wasn't that he played poorly in game one. It just, you need, like, we see it with Boston, whether it was Swayman or Allmark, both played unbelievable. And they're giving Boston those incredible saves. Like, there's a very real world where if those two goalies aren't in net, we're scoring a lot more goals in both game one and two.
Like, oh, yeah.
Some crazy saves. And you know, a lot of people will point out that, you know, Montgomery goes to Allmark after Swayman has an incredible night, and they think, oh, is that the... No, like, Allmark played out of his mind. That easily could have been 5-6-2. Allmark was a big difference maker for Boston. We were just able to squeak by a third, which is nice, which is what we needed.
I think that's the thing too. It's like, I'm glad their rotating goalie thing is very odd. It's a very unique thing inside of modern hockey. And part of me is in a weird way, I know we're cheering for the Leafs and everything, is kind of relieved it wasn't like, and then one guy shat the bed so bad, because then that was all we would talk about. Like, oh, what a huge mistake it was switching the goaltending. Their goaltending was very consistent between both games. And honestly, they're probably going to stick to it, and that's fine. And it almost gives the Leafs an opportunity to go like, well, no matter who's playing, they're going to be good. So let's just keep it up, instead of like licking your chops going like, oh, thank God it's one of these two guys, you know? So I just think I'm glad that we're avoiding a very easy and lazy narrative, and that they're both playing really well. And, you know, like they made that game a lot closer than it had to be, because there were some big, big saves, Ulmer, big saves, especially that sliding save right off his skate. Just unbelievable stuff.
And the one on Nick Robertson off his glove. My goodness. Yeah, exactly. Like you said, that's not the narrative, because no matter, it's obviously going to be Swayman back in game three, and then you're probably going to see Allmark on Saturday in game four.
Yep.
Boston has incredible goalies. They are going to play very well. That is the strength of their team. The strength of the Boston Bruins is their goaltending. So for us to try to dissect, oh, they're making the wrong decision, it's worked for them all year. They'll continue to do it. We just got to find a way to chip away and make it as uncomfortable as possible for those.
Yeah, you know, the only thing about Sammy, just before we get off that, is he took a puck right to the helmet and he looked not good. And I understand, like, I want to couch this statement by saying, like, it does often look like when Samsonov is hurt, he looks like he's been shot. Like, he does really react to being hurt, but he did look hurt. And it was very odd that they're like, okay, you good? And he's like, yeah. And they're like, okay, back in there. Like, that was, I don't know, just with head injuries, that was a little odd, but I'm glad he's okay.
I literally turned to you as soon as that happened. That happened with 13 seconds left in the first. And I said,
yes,
whatever we do, do not allow a shot in the next 13 seconds, because it's going in the net. And it went in the net.
On a beautiful play, I will say a beautiful play, because this beautiful back blind pass to Pastrnak, who just buries it. And it looks like Sammy didn't even have a chance, even though he was like 20 feet away. But, you know, it just, what a classic Leafs end of the period. They played great. They played to the tie. And the last 13 seconds, they choked it away. I think it was 7 seconds left.
7 seconds left. Yeah, that left a sour taste. If you look at my mood in that first intermission compared to the second intermission and then after the game, oh my God, night and day. I went for a walk. I left the bar and I went for a walk. That first intermission, I'm so upset.
You're like, okay, see you guys later. Like, okay, see you, buddy. We got to strap a heart rate monitor to you during these games. It'll be like a hummingbird. Like, it'll just unbelievable. Oh. But yeah, that could have been a real backbreaker. So we're talking about bouncing back. That could have been the backbreaker, you know, giving up that goal right at the end. Samsonov not looking great, seeing stars in his eyes. And then they come back to tie the game and eventually win it with the Auston Matthews goal. Did you hear the Jack Edwards call for this?
Auston
Matthews goal?
I did.
He just goes silent for 10 seconds.
Yes, I did.
Oh, I love it. I love it. I hate Jack Edwards so much.
Yeah, very slow.
I hope he's okay. I hope he's okay, because I don't think he's doing well, but I hate that guy so much.
Yeah, it's funny, like, that goal that makes it 2-1 for Boston, you think, okay, same old story, same sort of thing as game one. Because, like, if we want to talk about game one for a little second.
Sure.
A lot of the Leafs stereotypes kind of came true in game one.
Yes. Yeah.
Just weren't ready, overly hyped, making way too many dumb mistakes, too many stupid penalties. And the same thing could have happened. The script was there for it to unfold the exact same way going into that first intermission. And just like a great response in that second, playing them very tight, not giving them anything. Boston, you know, could barely funnel anything through towards Samsonov in that second period. And then you capitalize. So just a nice little breath of fresh air there as the Leafs tie the series. My goodness, that fourth line. Let's talk about the fourth line, because this might be my favorite fourth line that I've ever seen the Leafs have in recent memory. It's just like Sheldon said, they have such a very clear identity. Dewar and Kampf are just so defensively responsible, and Reeves was absolutely everywhere last night. Everywhere. Forechecking like a monster, hitting everything that moves, backing his ass up in front of the net, just everywhere. It was so encouraging to see. And you're just thinking, like, wow, this is such a different player than what we saw a few months ago. And when you talk about lineup changes and like who could come out, who could come in, you know.
Yeah.
You know.
We'll talk about.
Which we will talk about. We might get Willie back. We don't know. But say he comes back, you have to make a lineup decision. I don't know if you touch that fourth line. Because, you know, obviously the natural thing is, yeah, I guess Reeves would be coming out. But that fourth line is just so, like I said, the identity is just so clear that,
yeah,
does someone from the third line maybe come out instead? Because the fourth line, they're just doing the job they have to do and they're doing it very well.
Yeah, like, you know, that line, it's just Connor Dewar was kind of everywhere. You just felt like you were looking at 24 all the time. You're like, oh my God, there he is again. Like, you know, and I agree with you. You know, Reeves didn't play very much, but when he played, you knew he was on the ice. It's kind of a funny thing because we're going to talk about some other players. There are some players that played 20 plus minutes and you didn't even see them at all. And then Ryan Reeves steps over the ice. Do you know Pat Maroon played 5 more minutes than Ryan Reeves?
Wow.
And I couldn't tell you what a single thing Pat Maroon did. And Ryan Reeves was on the ice and he was just hitting everything that moved. And so I will say there were some confusing things where, like, I think Sheldon Keefe shares your sentiment, Joey, where he loved the fourth line too. But then he puts them out for offensive draws and like things like that. And you're like, what the hell is this? Like, because when they played in their own defensive zone, they were great.
Yeah, but even they were forechecking well, right? They were holding the puck in.
Yeah.
Like they were playing well in the offensive zone. And I thought Sheldon did some really cool stuff where when they were trapped defensively, he was sending out Yarncroc in Reeves' spot, right? You know what I mean? So it was Kampf, Yarncroc, and Dewar, and they shut down the competition beautifully. So a great little chess match there by Sheldon, I thought, just to do. He was doing the same sort of thing where he would put Liljegren with Riley when they had an offensive zone faceoff just to show different looks because, you know, that's what Sheldon does, right? Like he's a juggler. He's going to mix and match. And sometimes it's not going to work, but I thought he played it really well last night and it worked out really nicely.
That third period, he was really in his bag doing stuff. Like, cause you saw combinations where, you know, we're sitting at the bar and you're having to do the number with the math. Like, you're like, wait, who's that? They're going 4 forwards here. All right. You know, like, and I, you know, it worked. So like, I can't really complain, but it is going to be very interesting now going home, getting the last change, maybe Nylander coming back, touch wood, you know, then it's going to be a really, really surprising and interesting. You're looking for wood right now.
He's looking for wood. Yeah. I found some.
There you go. Okay, good. Then we'll see really when he get an extra guy rolling over, switching up the lineups and stuff like that, because then he really has the advantage there too.
Let's talk Willie Nylander.
Let's talk Nylander. Put him on a milk carton. Where the hell is William Nylander?
This whole situation is so bizarre.
It is incredibly bizarre.
I'm just so shocked we haven't had someone come out with footage. Like, has anyone combed through the entire Tampa game just for every single William Nylander shift to try and pinpoint what happened, where, when, who?
If you don't know what's going on, William Nylander has missed the first two games of the playoffs after being the healthiest player in I don't know, this era of the Toronto Maple Leafs. He doesn't miss because of injuries. Last time he missed because of injury was 2016, except for like a COVID brief thing, but I don't think that's really on him. And he played game 82, and now he all of a sudden there's a mystery ailment and no one knows why he's not playing. He did have some optional skates, but he skated with the guys that were getting scratched. And so it's just confusing going where he was so consistent. He played game 82, a completely meaningless game, and then can't play game 1 and 2. What the hell?
And like, he looks, I mean, I was watching the footage. He looked like he was laboring when he was on the ice for those optional skates. And you're like, what is true? I don't know, because people are saying it's an upper body injury. I've heard some speculation that it's his back. I mean, now people are speculating that, is this a concussion? We're just grasping at straws here because obviously Sheldon and Brad, I mean, Brad has made it very clear to Sheldon that there will be no updates on injuries. So,
and then Sheldon has made it very clear to everyone else that Brad does not want him to talk about it.
Yeah. you know, we just don't know. And everything is just going to kind of be a reach and a guess until we see 88 back in the lineup. And Sheldon says, what? No update today because we're traveling, but he's a possibility for us tomorrow is all we would say. So,
another vague statement, not getting us any clearer to an answer.
Yeah, they'll skate tomorrow morning, I guess. We'll see if he takes line rushes. Yeah. If not, then same sort of thing. You're waiting for 6:30 to see who steps on the ice.
You know, we were both kind of confused or surprised, not confused. We were both surprised that game 1 to game 2, there was no changes in the lineup at all. You know, do you think that's what we see if game 3, let's say Nylander's still out? Do you think it's still the same lineup in game 3?
Forward group, yes.
Okay.
Because there's really not much else you can do. Like Gregor's yep. not getting in.
No, God no.
Defense. I would like to see TJ Brody back.
Yeah.
I think
yeah.
there are aspects of the game where we do miss him. I don't
the
know.
The penalty kill specifically.
Yeah. I think yeah. like if you're asking me who's coming out, I think the natural thing is to say Labushkin. Mm. But I was not the biggest fan of Simon Benoit's game one and two. I no. thought he labored. I thought he struggled. I mean, look at that second Boston goal last night where he's like, it was a draw in our own zone. And by the time Boston scores 5 seconds later, Simon Benoit's up at the blue line. So yeah, I don't understand line. What's going on there.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think TJ Brody should get in this series. I think, yeah. you know, I understand he's had a rough year, but he is our best defensive defenseman.
Yeah, like, so. It's just so funny. Like, him having a rough year is like, oh, he's completely unplayable trash. It's like, well, no, he just by expectation didn't have as good of a year as he usually has. But I think sitting both game one and two is odd. I think that it maybe is too far the other way now because our penalty kill is not great and their power play is good. And this is one of the biggest differences we can make for it. I agree. You know, and it's pretty clear that McCabe actually played the fourth most minutes on defense. It was clear that he had a short hook with Benoit and McCabe, Keith did. So yeah. they were pulling him out a lot, even though they had been one of our most consistent pairs. So Edmondson got the second most minutes by a defenseman, Lilligren right behind him. So like, it's clear that even they were like, oh God, this is not working great.
Yeah, I wonder because obviously it's like, okay, if you put Brody in the lineup and you take out, let's mm-hmm. say, Labushkin.
Sure.
You can't.
No, you can't put Riley. Don't say it.
Yeah.
You Riley can't put Riley and Brody.
Has not no. worked. And I understand it did work once upon a time. It just has sure. not worked at all this year. So I think you have to mix and match if that's the case. I don't know. I'm glad I don't have to make this decision, Andrew.
Yeah. Yeah, I know. I know. We're going to see what happens. The defense is the area where I think we could juggle a little bit. And I'm very surprised. It'll be one of the, it's clearly not going to be Joel Edmondson because they clearly love him. So, and whether you agree at home or not is up to you. But
I love that slash with no time on the clock.
Okay. I did like that. That's like the one where you're like, hey, I'm. What a big dickhead he is. I love it.
You want to take a dumb penalty? Take one with 0 seconds on the clock because the ref's arm went up, but there were zeros on the clock. So yeah, take that all day. That's what they should do every single game. With 1 second left in the third, take a swing at someone.
Yeah. That is game awareness. That's IQ, baby. There's like yeah. 2 seconds. Great. Crack. You know, oh God, you know, Brad Marchand, can we just talk about him going down like he was shot when Bertuzzi's stick hit him in the back of the leg? Insane. It's not even the right leg. And like, it drives me crazy. I just, my thing that I'm so confused about, and to be honest, I almost made this later segment and we might see it later, but is Brad Marchand, everyone knows, is a big pest and dives and embellishes and gets in people's face and stuff like that. And for some reason, it's an acknowledgement that he does that and we're okay with that. Whereas someone like Michael Bunting last year is like, oh, he dives. We should really punish him for it. I just kind of don't understand. I understand that Brad Marchand is also 36. He has won a Stanley Cup. He has been an Olympian. I get all these things that there's one player is a lot more accomplished than the other. But it's just that it's one of these very odd things that we all just accept. And we go, what are you going to do? It's like, well, that is so strange. I just find that incredibly odd.
I wonder if, you know, having that egregious dive like in that moment is now going to, because obviously everyone's nonstop talking about it today and will be. Yeah. Until game three. So I wonder if that's going to spotlight just his antics a little bit for the refs. So I wonder if that'll work in our favor a little bit because obviously he didn't get the embellishment call. Bertuzzi gets called for that slash. Yeah. And now maybe that's something the refs think about going forward. Who knows? Like, I know it's their job to not carry over anything. But like you said, when Bunting was diving, he couldn't get a call. Wonder, I doubt it because it's Brad Marchand and it seems like that guy has horseshoes up his fucking ass. But
he's famous for licking people. Like it's just crazy that this is the same guy that we're talking about. Jack Edwards, once again, Britain, second time now this episode, he was already sending flowers to his home when he saw him go down. Like he was just like, oh my God, like someone call his parents. Like, oh Jesus Christ. Like it was just awful.
But I did like Bertuzzi, chirping him because obviously the game at the beginning of the year, the Liljegren, when Liljegren got hurt and Brad Marchand, you know, can openers him into the boards. And then you see the clip of Bertuzzi laughing and not doing anything, just sitting on the bench. And that just left a really sour taste in your mouth. Obviously him coming over from Boston. So to see that, and to, what did he say? Like, we got,
well, afterwards he was talking, I think it was somebody from The Athletic asked him about, you last year played for Boston and found out that Marchand is not a bad guy. And he goes, yeah, that's what I said. And he goes, do you still feel that way? And he goes, him and I have something to work out. And it was this very like cold way of saying it that you're like, oh shit, I think he's really mad at him. Like, I think there's not like a hockey, I'm going to punch this guy thing. It's like, no, I'm actually really pissed. And you're like, okay, that's awesome.
Yeah. He's wearing the wrong colors.
Yeah. And he's kind of a piece of shit. Like, it's like, you know, whatever.
So that was nice to see with zeros on the clock, just a little, little chirping, get him angry, keep that fire going.
Oh, I love it. Marchand skating away, Bertuzzi chasing him. Like, it's not, it wasn't backing up. It was like, no, I let me at him. That was awesome. I loved it.
Should we get into it? Let's get into This Is Egregious.
This is egregious.
Oh, this is egregious.
This is egregious.
It's the playoffs, so everything is more egregious. And, you know, we're a Leaf Nation. We're no stranger to exaggeration, overreaction. But, you know, things are going to be egregious throughout the playoffs, and we're just going to talk about them. So in between game one and two, I saw a headline that said, if the Leafs lose this series, they lost it on Saturday night. No, we lost game one on Saturday. And last time I checked, you need to lose four times to lose a series.
Oh, so, it's not a single elimination, eh?
Yeah, I don't think that's how it works in hockey. Mm. So that is the stupidest thing that I read that day.
Yeah,
series is tied, motherfucker.
How about that? Yeah.
Game one is a distant memory, and now game two is a distant memory. And, you know, it's a best of five now. So that's how the playoffs work. You need to win four, not one.
It's so stupid. It's just one of those things that, like, we talk about the Washington Capitals being -37 in point differential in the regular season. And you do that in the regular season because they play 82 games, a large span to, like, you know, get information from. And so that it tells you, in the average of most of these games, they have been net positive or net negative. In the playoffs, you don't do point differential because it doesn't matter because each game is so unique. And so we lost by one. Who cares? We won 3-2 in the next game. It's tied 1-1. That's all that counts. You know, like, so stupid.
Yeesh.
Yeah. My egregious is going to be about the Nylander injury situation. And it's not about William Nylander. He's allowed to be injured. That's totally fine. And it's not about the Toronto Maple Leafs not saying anything because they're allowed to do that. It's the idea that you're allowed to do that, that the press has to, like, work their way into the, like, little crevices, which I do not blame them for. This is absolutely their job. When no one is telling them anything, they have to find something to talk about. I get that they're trying to peel answers out of it. I just think it's crazy, antiquated, and, like, a very old school idea that you're just allowed to not say anything about players. Like, the fact that we have no idea what's wrong with William Nylander, if he's going to play, is just such an old idea that it's like, it's an upper body injury and it actually might be a calf. And there's no recourse for that at all. Like, the other thing is, if the NHL is going to partner with gambling sites and stuff, and it's all, you know, all over the place, probably too much, I get that. But that's the reason why the NFL has to say exactly what's wrong. And if they're doubtful, questionable, probable, those are all real words that you have to use, and there's accountability for it, and you get fined if you do it incorrectly, because people want transparency. I'm totally okay with that. And especially when injuries involve heads and long-term, you know, there's long-term punishment for those things. You should be honest about these kind of things. And it's we can joke about being frustrated because we don't know what's going on, but it is also weirdly just no accountability. So I just think this kind of old hockey idea needs to change, and we need to start being a little more honest about what's going on with players.
Yes,
that's my rant for today, because I find that to be egregious.
I just want Nylander back for game three, man. I want Mitch Marner to come back for game three. Where the hell is
Mitch
that
Marner's
guy?
Been out too, right? Yeah.
Jeez. I love Mitch Marner, and I think he takes a lot of unfair criticism, has taken so much unfair criticism over his tenure. That being said, he had some tough moments last night. He had two really tough games. He just has not been engaged in this series at all. He's failed to make any sort of an impact so far. That being said, it's a long series. So you hope, when I look at game three and I'm like, what do I want to see? I want to see vintage Mitchie. That's what I would like to see.
Yeah. It is odd. He's getting a lot of minutes. He's gotten minutes with Matthews, even in game two. And it just feels like he's floating out there. It just feels like non-consequential minutes. He's just not affecting the game, which we know he can do. And it's just, it is incredibly frustrating for a player that talented and getting the minutes you do and getting paid the way you do to not be influencing this game.
Yeah, I mean, Mitch Marner is one of our best, if not our best defensive forward and one of our most talented offensive forwards. And when you go 120 minutes not really noticing him, that is a red flag. I'm not sitting here and saying they need to bump Marner down the lineup or anything like that. What I'm saying is I just want number 16 to play the way I know he can and to affect the game, because
that's
we need Mitch Marner to win this series. We need Mitch Marner to go on a long run and win a Stanley Cup. So when you're seeing, you know, arguably, I don't want to say arguably your best player because it's Austin Matthews, baby.
It's Austin
Matthews. One of your best players not playing the way he needs to be, that's frustrating. It's he's not going into the boards hard. He's avoiding contact. He's not dishing out any sort of contact. He's floating, like you said, coasting. Just you know he can be a puck hound. You know he can just be relentless on the forecheck, on the back check. And when you're not seeing that, you're like, well, is Mitch injured too? Because what the hell's going on?
I honestly, and the worst part is that if this was just two games, and usually in the playoffs he's a dog and all that kind of stuff, I don't think we'd be doing this. You're like, well, that's odd. You know, he's not normally playing it. But the scariest part is this has been a trend in the playoffs since we've had him, that he does just disappear for games. And it just is so confusing because he has a style of gameplay that he should never be able to disappear. Like, he's so good at so many elements of the game that you're like, oh, at least he's doing this really well. I just, sometimes you just don't even know he's out there, and he played 20 minutes last night. And I just think that's crazy.
Yeah, he's a forward who can play in all situations.
Yeah.
Penalty kill, like, power play, 5-on-5, like whatever you want. And that should not be something that you're not noticing. 16 should be someone you're noticing all the time.
Yeah, it's confounding. I don't really know what to do. We've now mixed up the lineup, so he's playing with different players. Like, you think anything to shake it up, and it's just, it's, not happening. And we hope for a big game when he comes back to Toronto, but, like, good God.
Yeah, it would be nice for him to break out in Toronto and just have have the entire fan base just lose their mind off of a beautiful Mitch Marner play. That would be nice. Oh, that's what I want to see.
Wouldn't that be nice? Yeah, everyone just doing the fainting and just like, oh, my goodness. Because he's so capable of it. So we'll see. We'll see when they come back.
The ticket prices for Wednesday, I was just curious before, did we talk about this last episode?
We did a little bit. I actually don't know if we did, to be perfectly honest. I think we tweeted it out from the Good Buds podcast.
Oh, yeah. Okay. Yeah. Just basically the fact that it's costing you $742 if you want to get into the lower bowl on Wednesday night. My God. For round one, like, I can justify paying something ridiculous like that for a Stanley Cup final.
Yeah.
For round, oh, my Lord.
The negative cynical approach to that is that, well, there's only going to be one round, so we got to make the most money possible. I know. I hear myself say it. I don't like it either. But it's funny because I have family in Boston. We hate them. We don't talk to them very much. But is that they were sending over a link that it was $60 to get into the stadium last night, to the arena last night for game two. $60 American. So let's just be generous and round up to $85 Canadian. And it's a lot different than $700 for the Leafs. Oh, my goodness.
Insane. Like, I don't understand. I guess the only way to get tickets is to win them somehow.
Yes, exactly. Yeah. Like, I got to get some very odd disease so I can win some tickets. It's just brutal because it's just the acceptance of saying I'm just not going to see them live is just a very odd thing.
Yeah, because I really wanted to this year. I was like, you know, yes, we've done it. We've gone to playoff games together, and you know, sometimes you're shelling out like stupid amounts of money, like $350. That's a lot of money, but
yes, it is.
I get it, just based on the regular season prices, but then to mark it up times 200%, you're just like, oh my God.
Oh my God. Thank God they don't go for late playoff runs. It'd bleed us all dry. Like, can you imagine? That's round one. Can you imagine what you say? I'd pay $700 for a Stanley Cup. Can you imagine what they're going to charge if they ever made the Stanley Cup? $3,000?
To get into the lower bowl, something like that.
Yeah. Oh, then it's like a Taylor Swift concert.
$1,500 for an obstructed view standing room seat.
Yeah. Like, it's just, I don't really understand what you're supposed to do here.
All right, let's do the numbers game.
numbers game, a game where I put Joey on the spot to see if he can remember Leafs rarest pass and what number they wore. Joey is currently 53 for 57, but each player he gets wrong between now and the end of the Leafs year, Joey will donate $10 to the You Can Play Project, a foundation working to ensure the safety and inclusion for all that participate in sports. Joey, are you ready?
I'm ready.
Okay, we're going to go back to 2007. Yeah, I know, right? Okay, I'm just trying to make sure that we're talking, that I'm getting all the games played correctly, because I do not want to screw you here.
These are the dark years. This is in the middle of the non-playoff making years.
Yeah, and it's funny because you look at the roster and you're like, there is some leftovers from good teams, and then right as we're entering young players of bad times. Yeah. But a player I think still linked with the organization and I have very fond memories of. Let's go with the first game. First name, Nick Antropov.
Oh, we've done Nick Antropov.
I can't find him on here. I thought we did too, but I don't have record of him here.
Well, he wore two numbers with the Leafs. He wore number 9 and he wore number 80.
Yes. 2007, he wore number 80. That is, congratulations, you're correct. No bonus points awarded for number 9. I couldn't find it, but I think we did Alexei Ponikarovsky, and that's who we confusing it with.
We definitely did Pawnee as well.
Yeah. Okay. Well, all right. Well, let's see if we did the second player as well. I'm going to go with, can you get the number of Pavel Kubina?
We have done Pavel Kubina as well.
What the fuck? What the fuck? No, we haven't.
Yeah, because then I told the story of how he switched numbers, because Pavel Kubina wore 13 with the Lightning, and obviously he couldn't wear that here. And he wore number, I think, 31 as well as number 73. Like he started wearing 73, and then he got everyone. He paid for the jersey switch to go to 31.
Okay. Well, the control F didn't really work on my document here. I think I misspelled Kubina. Well, wait.
Do you want to give me another player? Do you want to just give me
someone else? I'm going to give you one more player. No, that's too hard.
Give me a hard one.
Okay, Bates Battaglia.
33.
Fuck you. How did you do that quick? Get out of here. Oh, my God. Bates Battaglia, 33. Wow, now we're just showing off. Holy smokes, that was impressive. Damn it. Okay, well, Joey's 2 for 2, and probably more than that. Yeah. Congratulations, Joey.
Perfect. Thank you for that confidence boost, Andrew.
Leafs aren't the only ones winning right now. Okay.
Yeah. You know what's great about, like,
what's that?
A playoff win?
Okay.
Is watching the other games after your team wins. There is no better feeling in the world than watching the late game after your team has won and just being happy, stress-free. Like, it's a magical feeling. I'm now going to sit and watch every single game tonight, like, bits and pieces of all four with the biggest smile on my face, because we won last night and we don't play till tomorrow. So in this little pocket of my existence today, I'm a bundle of joy, even though I'm hungover as crap and going to watch four hockey games just with a massive smile on my face. It's like when you wake up, you know, and like you wake up in the middle of the night or early in the morning to take your like morning pee or something like that after a win. And you're just like, yes, I'm loving life right now. That's the playoffs, man. Oh, my
I love God. It. You and I had social plans after the game too. And we did other things, and it just kept hitting me in a wave, probably a drunkenly wave of going like, oh yeah, we won tonight. Fuck yeah. Like it just every 15 minutes, I was like, oh hell yeah. And I it's the same thing, but the opposite when on after Saturday, you turn on SportsCenter and you're trying to watch something and it's just Leafs. And you're like, God, fuck it. I don't even want to watch this.
I know. Yeah, it is the same thing, because then I watched all the Sunday games just miserable. I sat on the couch just miserable watching those great games on Sunday. There were some really great games. Okay, that Colorado-Winnipeg series, like, wowee.
Can you imagine being Colorado, scoring 6 goals, outshooting your opponent by 10 shots? They only gave up 21 shots and losing 7-6? Oh, heartbreaker.
Especially going into that series, you're like, all right, our biggest issue is going to be getting past Connor Hellebuck. Well,
yeah.
We did it 6 times. Oh, we still lost.
I don't even know what you do too, because you know they're kind of stuck with the goalie right now. The other one's injured, I think sick actually. But so they're this is the way it's gonna be.
And Noonan,
or whatever his name is. So they're stuck with Georgiev.
You know that Jesse Pollock guy, the guy who's obsessed with Toronto, but he's a Winnipeg Jets fan.
Yeah.
After that win, he was like talking about like absent four, like who's saying absent four? He was like losing his mind, and I'm like, dude, Was anyone saying abs and core? No. Everyone was saying one or the other in seven. That'd be like saying, like watching Steph Curry hit a three-pointer and be like, oh, you motherfuckers who said Steph Curry can't shoot. Like, what? Dude, you're arguing with yourself.
It's the worst kind of straw man. And it's just like, but it's a very classic me approach. It was so funny when I saw somebody post that video, which I, every time I see his face, I'm like, well, skip that video. somebody's like, when you order Steve Dangle on Temu, like you just, you're allowed to cheer for your team, but like, don't, I don't know. He's just such a windbag. I can't stand him. Like he's the guy that shows up to Maple Leaf Square in a Jets jersey. Cause that's funny to him. I don't know why. Yeah.
He loves the Leafs. He loves the Leafs.
He does.
He talks about
he loves the Leafs more than us. Yeah. Yeah.
Hyman scores a hat trick last night. McDavid gets 5 assists. My goodness, the Oilers look good. I mean, we expected this. We expect them to shit kick the Kings. I think just because of their history, that's why I kind of said Oilers in 6, but I would not be surprised if this is over earlier than that.
Yeah, if that first game is any indication, you know, the Kings have a real issue scoring goals. They scored 4. That should be good, but you let in 7, and that's also not good. So I wonder if we're going to bounce back to a 2-1 game either way. Just because of the style of play, but man, giving up 7 goals, it might be early death for the LA Kings.
And Mark Stone scores a goal in his first game back. How pissy would you be if you were a Dallas Stars fan? Like, not only do you have to get the Vegas Golden Knights after winning the conference as your present, you're going to get a bunch of Golden Knights coming back from injuries, air quotes.
Injuries. I have no doubt Mark Stone lacerated his spleen, but I do doubt that his return was a little bit shaped by the idea that the playoffs do not have a cap. This is another one where we just accept it. This is like when I was talking about Marchand or Nylander, like, you know, whatever. We just accept this. And it's like, yeah, that's what you're allowed to do that. You're like, that's stupid. We all know that. You know what? We missed the most obvious bet in the world, Joey. We should have bet Mark Stone to score last night. It would have been, of course he's going to score. Of course he's going to score. And he did. The other game that we need to talk about is, it was happening during the Leafs game, so we kind of missed it a little bit, but the Islanders collapse. To lose going down up 3-0, excuse me, to lose 5-3 is just unbelievable. Those goals were scored in succession, seconds of each other. Like, it's unbelievable.
That's tough for them, especially thinking you're going to get a road win against a really good Hurricanes team. Like,
yeah,
I think not many people, if anyone, has picked the Islanders to win this series. So to split that would have been huge for them going back home. But instead, now they're down 2-0. A tall ask for them. But yes, not my concern. My concern is the Boston Bruins tomorrow night, game 3. Game 4 goes on Saturday. We'll be back after game 4. I think we're going to do this, hopefully, for a long time, every 2 playoff games. And hopefully this goes until June. My goodness, because that would be sweet.
Yeah, expect to see us sometime on Sunday. Congratulations to PWHL Toronto on clinching the playoffs. And then the attendance record by Montreal, incredible. Did you see that Malala was there? Like, just incredible stuff happening at PWHL. So good for them.
It'll be interesting because now it looks like, well, they might not, there's still 3 games to go, but if they win the division, I guess the only division, they get to pick their playoff opponent.
I love it.
I hate that because I'm like,
why?
You're gonna make the wrong decision no matter what. It's bulletin board material. Like, you're giving the other team a reason to be pissy about it.
I understand that, but like, so Dallas would have chose Vegas?
No, for sure they wouldn't have, but whoever,
the LA Kings,
they would have chosen LA, and then LA would have been like, oh, they chose us. Here's all we needed to do to play like fucking the 2010 or 2012 LA Kings.
I get that. And this is probably something we should probably talk about in the offseason. But if years of Toronto facing the same opponents all over and over and over again, I love the idea of picking opponents. Let's mix it up. Yeah, let's choose the Islanders, you know? Yeah.
Well, we got Boston game 3 tomorrow night, Wednesday night. If you made it this far, we appreciate the hell out of all you good buds. Thank you so much for listening. Go Leafs, go.
Go Leafs, go.
When you're back down, in Mexico, I hope you feel better like you wanted to then. I know we haven't talked. No, we haven't talked in a while, but my hands have missed the feel of your cold black hair. Yeah.
Styles production.